back to another episode of Storytime with Daddy. Today we're going to continue reading In Susie and the Ballet Family by Lee Wyndham. This will be part 3, and today we're going to read chapters 8 through chapters 10. So let's get to it. Chapter 8, Cats, Crabs, and Kitten Capers. "Cats!" Bob shouted. "3 of them, all in a row on the roof." "Yes," Susie said. "Dinah and Thunder and the little black and white one is Jeté. Aren't they cute up there? I wonder how they ever reached the roof, though." As they came closer still, Bob said, "Through the open windows. It's no trick at all for cats to jump that little distance. We have several cats who live in the theater, and they get into the strangest places. Let's go up there and see if we can coax them down. Maybe we can take them on to the beach with us." "I'm afraid our cats don't think much of the ocean," Susie told him regretfully. "I took Jeté down once, but he scampered straight home." "They might get used to it," Bob said, undaunted. "Hello!" It was Mrs. Peters calling to them from the doorway of the cottage. "Mother, this is Bob Marlowe. Bob, my mother," Susie said. "And the Peters cats," she giggled, pointing to the roof. Mrs. Peters stepped out to look. "My goodness," she exclaimed, "is that where they went? I haven't seen them all morning." "May I show Bob the crow's nest?" Susie asked. "Of course," Mrs. Peters nodded, and both children raced up the narrow twisting stairway leading to the glassed room. "Say, this is neat," Bob said, glancing around. "A real lookout room." He leaned out one of the open windows. Hearing sounds below, the three cats padded to that edge of the roof and peered down. Bob heard the scrabble of their claws and, looking upward, saw them. He laughed at their curious little cat faces. "Here, Puss, Puss, Puss," he coaxed. "Come on down. Nice pussies, nice pussies." He patted the windowsill invitingly, but the cats only stared at him and did not budge. "I know how to get them down," Susie cried. "Step back from the window and wait," she directed. "I'm going below for a minute." She scampered down the winding stairway, and soon the tinkle of a small bell was heard below stairs. Bob heard a scurry on the roof, and then three cats jumped in through the window. They cast startled glances over their shoulders at him, and then fairly flew down the stairs. Bob could hear Susie laughing below. He followed the cats. "What was that?" he asked. They followed that bell as if it were the Pied Piper calling. "That bell means food to them," Susie explained. "Mother has trained them to come to her when she rings it by having a dish of food waiting for them. Now they come every time. Jeté has already learned about it by following the lead of the big cats." "Well, gosh," Bill said. "How clever." While the boy admired the feeding cats, Susie told her mother about the morning with the ballet family. "It was wonderful to watch Allegra Allard," she babbled. "She's light as a feather, and John Marlowe is marvelous. You should see his leaps, Mother. And Bob is awfully good. I may dance with him later on. Allegra said so." "And there was a girl," Susie began, but Bob spun about just then and said, "I thought we were going for a dip. How about it, Sue?" "Oh, yes," Susie said, "right away. Now you can see what a quick changer I am." She dashed away to her room and soon returned, wearing her new red swimsuit. "Whew," Bob said, "that was fast. I'm ready, too." "Your mother had me leave my shirt and jeans in your parents' bedroom. She's awfully nice, Susie. A nice mother person," Bob added. Susie glanced at him quickly. There was an oddly wistful note in his voice. She thought about it for a moment. Yes, her parents were very definitely nice mother and father persons. Of course, Allegra and John Marlowe were not like them, being professional dancers. Their niceness was different, sort of grand, Susie decided. Perhaps Bob saw a home folksness about her mother and probably without even knowing it, missed it in his own life. Well, as long as they were at the shore together, she would share her parents with him. He certainly was generous about sharing his with her. With an emphatic nod, Susie followed Bob down the bluff to the beach below. They spent a happy afternoon playing in the water close to the shore, careful to stay out of range of the big breakers. Here there were no ropes to help them keep their balance, or lifeguards to get them out of trouble. Later, Allegra and John joined them, and then Mrs. Peters came down and met the ballet couple. Susie noticed that Mother was a bit quiet at first with the famous dancers, But both John and Allegra were so pleasant and easy, Mrs. Peters was talking happily to them before long. This was the first of many similar lazy, contented afternoons spent at the Peters Beach after mornings of dancing in the little ballroom of the Neptune Palace. Sometimes Bob and Susie brought the cats down to the sand, but no matter how often they did so, Dinah and Thunder were firm in their dislike of the ocean. Jute was more fun and more venturesome. On quiet, windless days, he would go to the very edge of the water and test it with his small, white-mittened paws, then scurry back, tumbling end over end in a flurry of sand. Once he found a crab tossed up on the beach by the waves. He was fascinated with the strange creature until it pinched his exploring paw. Poor Jeté yowled pathetically, holding his paw up, crab and all. With great presence of mind, Bob used a piece of driftwood to force the crab's pincer open. Susie cuddled and petted her injured pussy until he forgot his unpleasant seashore adventure. But not altogether, for Jeté never again showed the slightest bit of interest in crabs. The only thing that ever clouded Susie's happy days at the seashore was the presence of April Shaw all too often in the little ballroom. April had become increasingly jealous of Susie and the attention Allegra gave her, and she did not bother to hide her feelings. "Don't pay any attention to her," Bob advised Susie. "If this weren't such a nice spot for the summer, Mother and Dad would tell her off. But with her father owning the hotel and all, well, Mother does not want any unpleasantness," Bob shrugged expressively. However, it was hard to ignore someone who hated her as thoroughly as April seemed to, Susie thought. She found herself watching for the ballroom door to open and April to appear, and she sighed with relief when April left. It was silly, but there it was. One of the truly wonderful things that happened was the invitation to the whole Peters family to come to dinner in the banquet hall at the Neptune Palace one Saturday night, and afterwards to watch Allegra and John Marlowe dance. They performed difficult adagios, slow movements and extensions, and Susie never ceased to marvel at their perfect control of every muscle. Of all the audience, she and Bob knew best how many hours of preparation went into every performance, how many rehearsals there were before each show. Allegra Allard and John Marlowe were never satisfied with anything less than perfection. Noting how much Susie enjoyed these performances, Mr. Peters made Saturday night dinner at the Neptune Palace a weekly affair for the family. In rapture, Susie watched Allegra and John Marlowe dance the Black Swan Pas de Deux, and lively bits from the Pied Piper, the Scotch Symphony, and the Bluebird Pas de Deux from Sleeping Beauty. Allegra also made a charming Coppelia, the mechanical doll. She danced the role perfectly, Susie thought, unwinding and nearly toppling over, and then dancing animatedly again when wound up by the toy maker, John. She was like a fairy creature as Giselle, and a spirited Spanish dancer in another number. On a Sunday, following one of the enchanting Saturday performances, Mrs. Peter arranged for a beach picnic for the two families. It was a balmy evening, and all the food tasted delicious. The soft shell crabs and potato chips, the cool soda drinks. Afterwards, everyone lay back on the sand, quiet and relaxed. Susie was nearly asleep, her head in her mother's lap, when, as in a dream, she heard Allegra's voice. "Shall we tell Susie now, Bob?" Allegra was asking. Susie popped right up, wide awake in a second. "What?" she asked. "What? Tell me, please!" Chapter 9. Exciting plans. "Well, I guess we'll have to now," Bob said, laughing. "You tell her, Mother." "No, you," Allegra said. By this time, Susie was on her feet, jumping up and down. "Please, somebody tell me," she pleaded, perishing of curiosity. "Well," Bob drawled again, then briskly, "how'd you like to be a part of the big end-of-the-season show at the hotel?" "What?" Susie squeaked. "You heard me," Bob said. "I did?" Susie asked in a daze. "Do you mean it?" The ballet family glanced at each other, smiling and nodding. "Oh," Susie breathed, quite overcome. "I'd love it." Then she became alarmed. "But what could I do? You're all such wonderful dancers." "I think we can find the proper steps for you to do in the Nutcracker," Allegra announced. Susie clasped her hands tightly. That is the ballet where the Sugar Plum Fairy has that heavenly grand pas de deux with her cavalier, she cried breathlessly. Oh, Mother, do you remember the time we saw it at the Ballet Center Theater? Mrs. Peters nodded. It was a lovely performance. But you didn't dance that afternoon, Susie said, regretfully, to Allegra and John Marlowe. No, Allegra smiled. I'm sorry, but you see, we have several ballerinas in the company, and we all take turns at the choice roles. Susie said, one of the little boys near us kept asking his mother, are the people real? Are they real? How precious, Allegra cried. Now that is a compliment indeed. I hope when John and I dance, the children ask the same question. I'm sure they do, Mrs. Peters said. Well, again Allegra smiled. Now for a little more detail about our Nutcracker. John is doing some new choreography, especially for this performance. In a way, we have April to thank for it. Allegra wrinkled her nose and laughed wryly. You see, her mama was determined that April should distinguish herself in some way before this summer ended, so she thought we would find a spot for April in one of our numbers. Susie gasped with shock, and Mr. and Mrs. Peters, who had by now heard of April, looked incredulous. That's what dance schools have to do to contend with, Allegra said. Overambitious mamas who want to push their daughters along, ready or not. It really does awful things to their bones and muscles, for which the children will pay during the rest of their lives. But this kind of mama doesn't stop to think, or else the teachers aren't interested in enough to make them understand, and that is criminal. Allegra sounded so very indignant that her husband touched her arm gently. She shook herself. Sorry, you nice people, she apologized. I didn't mean to get up on a soapbox and deliver a lecture, she continued after a moment. Anyway, the only thing John and I could think of, which would not make the whole performance ridiculous, was an adaptation of Act Two of The Nutcracker. Susie clapped her hands in delight. I see you remember it well, Allegra said. We'll have to modify it so that we can use children for everything but the grand pas de deux. What children? Susie asked. Besides us, I mean. Aha! John Marlowe exclaimed. That girl is sharp. Susie, my dear, have you any idea how many girls are taking ballet lessons nowadays? She shook her head. Well, I'll tell you. Thousands. In fact, millions. And about 24 of them are staying right here at the Neptune Palace this summer. They have been our ardent fans all season, so Allegra thought, why not use all the ballet mad children in the hotel and please everybody? And we are, and I'm figuring out simple steps that even beginning students can do. The mothers have volunteered to make all the costumes, and the hotel has hired 2 seamstresses to do the fine touches on them. And, Susie began breathlessly, what will I be? We thought to make you Clara, the little princess. Susie's face fell. But, in the second act, practically all she does is sit. The words fairly burst out. The ballet family laughed at her outburst. That's what we thought of, too, Bob confessed at last. So, we're going to honor April with the part. Another girl at the hotel will play the Nutcracker Prince. You and I are going to do an adaptation of the Spanish dance. And then I'm going to do the dance of the candy canes. Remember that? You'll also be Dewdrop in the Waltz of the Flowers. Susie's eyes were shining when John Marlowe broke in. And I, he said in an unnaturally high voice, am going to be the Bonbonniere, Mother Ginger herself, with all those candy children hidden in her skirts. The costume and trappings are rather heavy, so they always have a man in this part. We're going to use the baby ballet for this, and that will take care of all the ballerinas at the Neptune Palace. How does it strike you, Miss Susan Peters? Fine, Susie exclaimed enthusiastically. When do we begin? In a few days. We're still working out the choreography. You come up to the hotel tomorrow and help, Bob suggested. Then you'll see just how a ballet is planned. Susie hugged herself tight. This was almost too good to be true. How could a summer, which had started so uneventfully, turn out so absolutely, scrumptiously, super wonderful? She could hardly wait for tomorrow, and for all the other days she would be working with the ballet family. Chapter 10. April Showers. Prissy Sims was already playing sparkling selections from the musical score of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite for John Marlowe when Susie arrived at the little ballroom on the stroke of 9. He was sitting at one of 2 bridge tables set aside by side and covered with sheets of paper and musical scores. Bob was hovering near his father, and Allegra was at the portable bar, warming up. "Hi, Susie. We can use you to demonstrate steps," John said. "Get busy and warm up." And just like that, Susie felt part of the production end. There followed two wonderful crowded hours of planning each step of the dances. Susie could not make heads or tails of the vertical rectangles and squares and triangles that indicated the dance steps on paper, but Bob could read them with ease. This is a system of dance writing called labanotation, invented by a man named Rudolf von Laban. "Every symbol indicates a definite position of some part of the body," he explained. It really isn't as complicated as it looks. Even the beginners at the Ballet Center Theater School study it. You see, Susie, long ago, ballets were not written down. They were remembered, step by step, by people who did them or saw them. You can imagine how unreliable that would be over a period of time. No two people ever remember a thing the same way, you know? But by using the Laban system, every step is noted down exactly as the choreographer wants it. "Yes, sir," John Marlowe asserted. "No arguments about how so-and-so did such-and-such forevermore. Everything is down in black and white." He tapped the sheets of paper with satisfaction and stood up to stretch. Susie studied the rectangles and triangles and squares and little lines running this way and that, but they still did not mean a thing to her. "I wish I could read this Laban system," she sighed. "It's going to be taught to dancers more and more," John Marlowe told her. "Give Susie an example of how it works," he suggested to his son. "Sure, Dad." Bob picked up a pencil and a fresh sheet of paper. "Look, Susie, the labanotation signs are written on a three-lined staff that represents you, like this. See? The middle line is your middle. Everything written to the right side of it is something you do with the right side of your body. Everything written on the left of it is what you do with the left side." Susie leaned over Bob's shoulder, completely absorbed. He went on, working swiftly on the paper. "The signs point in the direction in which you are to move, like this." His pencil flew across the page, making the symbols. "When you write the musical counts alongside the staff, you know when you are to move and what part of your body and where. Isn't that simple?" "Well, not for me," Susie admitted, "but it sounds marvelous." Bob continued his notation and then pushed the paper toward her. "Read this from the bottom up," he directed, and helped her when she hesitated. "Let me see," Susie began. "This means that on the count of one, you step to the right with your right foot. On count two, you step forward on your left foot. On count three, you step forward on your right foot. On the next three counts, you..." "Oh dear, what do you do?" "You simply reverse all the steps," Bob said. "You step to the left with your left foot, forward with the right, then forward with the left. Try it, Susie." Holding the notation before her, Susie moved slowly through the steps. "Why, it's a waltz," she exclaimed, "and I did it." "Sure you did. I told you it's easy. You can use these signs to show how your arms, head, or any other part of your body moves. You can write all kinds of movements. Here, this is an arabesque, but you can notate it, even cartwheels and somersaults if you want to." "Oh my!" Susie blinked in admiration of his skill. "I must learn how to make labanotations and how to read them." Allegra stepped over gracefully and put an arm around Susie's shoulders. "Good for you," she praised. "Suppose I talk to Faye Mara about this. Perhaps she'll take a course in labanotation and teach it to you and the other girls in her school." "That would be super," Susie said. "Meanwhile, I'll get you an elementary book on the subject," Allegra promised. "Oh, thank you," Susie cried, "and I'll really study it. I'm sure you will." "Fine," John Marlowe's voice cut in with mock severity. "But how about getting back to work now, you chatters? Allegra, will you show Susie that bit from the Spanish dance we talked about? Bob, you work with them. Prissy, play it, will you please? A little slow in tempo until they get the feel of it." In 2 weeks, the steps of the dances were set down on paper. Rehearsals could begin. The dancers had been selected for their parts through auditions, and now Allegra notified the various groups of children as they were needed for practice sessions. They came eagerly, very much in awe of the famous ballet people. But both John Marlowe and Allegra taught them, and Bob helped a great deal. Susie, too, was called upon to explain some of the steps, which she knew so well from helping to work them out. April arrived one morning looking stormy. "When do I get to practice my part?" she asked. "And what am I going to be?" "Oh, you'll be one of the stars," Bob told her with a secret wink at Susie. April nodded a satisfied smile on her face. "In what part?" she insisted on knowing. "You'll be Clara in the second act when she becomes a princess. You'll have a gorgeous white dress." "I think it should be pink," April said. "I look very well in pink," she frowned. "Let's see, how does that part go?" "You sail in very grandly on the arm of the Nutcracker Prince and are greeted by the Sugar Plum Fairy. And then..." But indignation was spreading on April Shaw's face. "Robert Marlowe," she cried. "After that, I just sit and sit and sit. I've seen this ballet and I know." "Well..." Bob was trying to think of something to say when his father came in. "Not necessarily," he said smoothly to April. "I've been thinking of some very charming steps to write in for you." "Oh, that's better," April said. Susie and Bob glanced at each other. This was news to them, but John Marlowe caught their attention and shook his head slightly. It must be that he wanted to write in something extra for April to keep her quiet, Susie decided. "I hope it will be on tow," April remarked. "My teacher told me I do very well on my points. When do I start rehearsing?" "We'll let you know," John Marlowe said, and walked away. April stared hard at Susie. "Are you going to be in the Nutcracker?" she demanded. Susie nodded. "But you don't even live at the hotel," April objected. "I don't see why you should have a part." "Because Susie is an excellently trained young dancer," Allegra said, stepping in quickly. Susie, who had stiffened with an icy clutch at the heart, now relaxed. She glanced at Bob. His face was rigid and his hands clenched. He was just barely holding his temper in. April stared petulantly at Allegra, but the steady gaze of the ballerina finally quelled her. She turned and left the ballroom. "How I'd like to give her a sound spanking," Allegra exclaimed. "That child is absolutely spoiled." A group of girls trooped in just then, ready to practice a very simple version of the waltz of the candy flowers. "Come along, Susie," Allegra said. "You're the dewdrop in this, you know." Susie forgot about April's unpleasantness as she worked out with the other girls. They were all anxious to learn and so happy with their parts. One of them, 8-year-old Robin Ann Palmer, came up shyly to Susie during a brief rest period, saying, "You're awfully good friends with Miss Allard, aren't you?" Susie smiled at the smaller girl. "She and my teacher used to study together," she said. "Miss Allard is marvelous, isn't she? I never get tired of watching her." Robin Ann sighed happily. "I can hardly wait to get back to my dancing school to tell my teacher and the other girls about her. They'll hardly believe Allegra Allard herself taught me a dance and touched me with her own hands. I feel so lucky." "Me too," Susie thought fervently. She could scarcely bear to wait to relate the happenings of this summer in her own school. Miss Prissy Sims again tinkled out the pretty measures of the waltz, and the girls lined up as Allegra clapped her hands. April Shaw and a girl named Charlotte Kirby showed up for rehearsal the next day. Charlotte was to dance the role of the prince. "I thought Bob would be the prince," April said. "No," Allegra told her firmly. "Bob will do a modified version of the candy cane buffoons, and we need him to double in some other parts. Charlotte will make an elegant prince, especially with those short, dark curls of hers. Come, girls, let's go through your paces." She consulted John's notations. "You enter from the left, so your right hand on top of the prince's left hand, April. Lightly so. The Sugar Plum Fairy will welcome you." She moved forward and indicated the welcome. "The prince will then tell in pantomime of the battle between the mice and the toys that took place in the first act, and how Clara helped him, and thus broke his enchantment. Then we will have a variation where you two will dance for the fairy." Now Allegra showed April how her dance would go. April performed the steps rather woodenly, Susie thought. She stopped abruptly. "These are not on tow," she objected. "I want to dance on tow. I've been dancing on my points for 4 years, since I was 7. All at once, Allegra's patience snapped. "Then you should have not been," she cried. "You are nowhere near ready to dance on tow, April Shaw. You are one of the worst trained dancers it has been my misfortune to meet. Please go. I'm sick of this whole affair. I will not have another thing to do with it. John, please telephone Mr. Shaw and ask him to come up here at once. I'm going to resign. This was supposed to be a vacation. Instead, her voice broke and she couldn't go on. Susie and Bob stared at her, horrified. Surely Allegra wasn't going to cry. Charlotte turned and ran from the ballroom. April Shaw seemed rooted to one spot. Her face went chalk white and her blue eyes wide and staring. She seemed unable to believe what she had heard. In three swift strides, John Marlowe was at Allegra's side, his arms around her, leading her away toward a bench near a window. Susie had a hollow feeling in her middle, as if what had just happened were a nasty dream, only it wasn't. This seemed like the end of everything, the end of her beautiful summer, the end of the Nutcracker, too. Her eyes filled with prickly tears, which ran down her cheeks, unchecked and unheeded. And that's where we'll end this time. I love you, sweetie. Good night.